Hey, this is James from TravelPunk.com. Back with another amazing episode, and good morning. I think here in Tennessee, we're finally going to go back to some chilly weather. We had, the weather here is stupid. The weather here is stupid. That's about the best way to actually, to describe it. We had days in the 80s. Then it went to blistering winter weather of like 30 degrees for about a week. Then went back to high 70s and 80s. And now back down to 30s. I don't know. So, Tennessee said, screw you to the fall, and just went schizophrenic. I would have liked about a month of 60s, 65. 65 is a good temperature. That's just me. All right. So today I will be talking about a few survival myths, mostly focused around the shit hit the fan. I will find links to, let's see, I'm tired today, guys. Me and Mike, we did a podcast on survival myths, maybe a series, like two or three. And I know we've covered a couple of the big ones on there, like moth grows on the north side of the tree, except for lots of places here in Tennessee where moss grows around the entire tree. So we covered a few of those. I'll try to link them up so that you guys can find them if you go to survivalpunk.com and look at the show notes for this episode, which will be episode 170, I think. So this time I'm going to focus more on survival myths that people have for bugging out, the shit hit the fan, collapse type situations. And this idea came from Kevin from the Survival Punks group on Facebook. Some really good ideas. And I realized we haven't bothered with survival myths in probably over 100 episodes. Probably time to get back to taking out a few of those. So let's, show notes. So if you have a question for a show like this, you can call and leave a question on the call line. The number is 615-657-9104. 657, that's area code 615-657-9104. You can always email me, jamesfromowlpunk.com, with questions or feedback, and I'll get them as well. If you would like a free, I said free, Survival Punk sticker, you can go to your favorite way to listen to the podcast. So if you have iTunes or, what's the other one? Stitcher. iTunes and Stitcher, we're on both of those. Google Play Store, we're on there too. I don't know. I guess if you leave a review on there too, I will honor the sticker deal. So go to that place, iTunes, Stitcher, whatever, leave a review, send me an email, james@survivalpunk.com, with the name that you use to write the review with and your address, and I will ship you a sticker for free. Awesome. And the Teespring campaign just ended. Thanks to everyone that bought a t-shirt or a hoodie. I highly appreciate that. Basically ended up just getting myself a free hoodie because they're sweet and I want one. And the Survival Punk is on Patreon now. You can support the show for as little as $1 a month, and that will help out with hosting costs and email fees and whatnot. One more thing. Oh, there is a Survival Punk Army. You can join that and really support the show at a whopping $5 a month. And I would appreciate that. It takes a bit to run the show and to make sure that it comes out week in and week out. And that helps. It's definitely the last kick in the butt when it's like, oh, I'm really tired today and I don't really feel well. Well, I've got Survival Punk Army members that need the show this week. So get off your ass and do it. And yeah, it happens. So let's get into the show at this point and stop rambling. Myth number one. I have a gun. I'll just take what I need. I've heard this before. I've heard people talk about it, you know, as in I've heard this or I've seen this, but I've seen people who have said that's their plan. And I keep a good mental note of those people. Because if I see them when the shit hits the fan, I'm going to shoot them. So yeah, there are people who do not plan or prepare to survive. They simply think that they're going to use their gun to go out and kill people or force them to give it to them at the point of a gun, like the government. When the shit hits the fan. Which is hilarious. Because these people are usually... they're inbred retards. And... they may or may not be the best skilled with that firearm in any case. They don't... I mean, they may be able to hit targets with it. But they've never been... they've never taken courses on... fighting with it. They're probably not ex-military because most of those guys are not idiots. Pretty intelligent guys. So yeah, it's probably not even a great weapon. We're not talking AR-15s. We're probably talking like hunting rifles or shotguns, and they're going to assault people and take their food with that. Without training. So that's going to be a die off right there. Like, I wouldn't say that's a large percentage, not counting, you know, like the biker raider gangs. Just talk about these lone wolf, and we'll talk about that in a second. Idiots that are going to go out and try to take what they need from other people. It will not work. You will just get shot. I mean, I don't know how else to beat it. And in fact, and I've said this before, if that's your plan, if your plan is to simply go take things from people when the shit hits the fan, turn this podcast off. Stop listening. You are not my audience. You are a fucking idiot. Get off of here. I don't even know what else to say. Just stop listening. This is not the podcast for you. You probably have micro penis to boot. So yeah. If you have a gun, you will not take what you need. Did I even put that? I don't need. So we're going to jump into the next one, that I had further down. I'm going to move it up. I don't need community. I'm a lone wolf survivalist. I'm going to live on my own and live off the land and maybe take things from others like that. Maybe be self-sufficient and self-reliant. It's probably not you. You are probably not Thoreau. You are not a hermit. If you are a super hermit, you are probably not listening to this podcast. I myself have hermit tendencies, but that's so far to the next level that you have to be a special kind of person to even be able to remotely pull off something like that. You know, that complete isolation and solitude. That's one of the three rules of survival, the rule of threes. You can only go so long without other people before you snap out. You know, unless you are a fucking weirdo. Like, I remember remember a couple years ago reading about a guy that had lived basically in the woods for like 10 years and would sneak off to houses and steal stuff quietly. And, you know, he was like the ghost of whatever town that was. Like, there was always like these weird rumors like, oh, stuff's disappearing and my house has been like, it's, you know, people thought it was some sort of weird like urban myth until the cops caught him one day. Like, he'd set off a silent alarm or something in a, I don't know, YMCA, summer camp building kitchen or something where he's stealing some stuff, and he got caught. And sure enough, yeah, they found his tent in the woods, his shack, and he had been out there for like 10 years, and he, the article was crazy. This guy is a true legit hermit, like wanted nothing to do with society. Like, he called Thoreau a pussy. I mean, it was pretty hardcore. That dude is not you. If it is, you're in the woods and you don't know what a podcast is. Not even for all the other advantages, just to not be crazy and snap out from lack of human contact. You need community during the shit hit the fan. You need community anyway. Humans are a social animal. You can't just cut yourself off from that unless you're fucking crazy. Or you'll end up crazy. I mean, one or the other. I mean, so you need community. You can't do everything yourself. We've talked about this. Like, it behooves you to be a generalist, a jack of all trades, more so than a specialist. That's where our current world is leading people to be specialists. Like, instead of being a handyman, a repairman that repairs a variety of many things, you are an Apple iPad Generation 4 repairman. That's all you can do. You can only repair that one thing. You know, or you're a bullshit job that doesn't exist. Instead of knowing a lot of things. However, there is a skill set. So, it only takes you, what is it, about 20% of the effort to get 80% of the results of a skill. Much like the 80-20 rule applies to everything. The rest of the percentage to get like, you know, to go from like 80% to like top percent, that's a massive amount of work. Massive amount of work. But just getting to that, you know, initial, you know, top 5, top 10%, not that hard. But you really can't, like, that's where the specialization comes in. Like, you can be good at a lot of things, but great at one thing. And you're not going to be, you know, a great hunter and an oral surgeon. You know, you can generally know about a few of those things. Like, you can know that, you know, this is a few of the ways to, like, deal with, you know, this sort of medical thing or that sort of medical thing. But you just can't learn everything. And having community with people with different interests is what helps that out. You know? So, that's what you need to do. That right there is why I can't even fathom how anyone could think that the lone wolf survival mentality would work. You just can't learn everything. I mean, yes, like I said, you can be a great jack of all trades. But having that person that's the master as well is good. I'd much rather have someone stitch me up that had done that their entire life as opposed to some guy that read about it on the internet. Just saying. I've told this story before. I had to get stitches on my knuckle one time from punching a clay pot when I was a teenager. And the nurse that stitched me up, who went to school for a long time, that had probably stitched up a lot of people, made a mistake that an older doctor had to call her out on. And that was, she stitched up my knuckle without checking to see if the tendon was severed, which it was. And the tendon had to be stitched together. And then, so they had to take the stitches back out, check the tendon. Sure enough, it was severed, or partially severed. It was cut, had to be stitched back together. And then the whole thing stitched back up again, which was a pain in the ass, or a pain in the hand, actually. And that's a professional, you know, your internet jockeys that have, you know, bought a suture kit off the internet and just was like, oh, I can totally do this. They're not going to know that. You need a community, and you need a diverse set of skills from a diverse set of people. I think I need some pine needle tea, actually. Next myth. I'll just eat deer. There are people that do not see the need to prep, to have a food storage, to have food storage. Because they're just going to hunt and eat deer all during the shit hit the fan. And only deer. Which is ridiculous. One, it just sets you up for... It sets you up for failure by refusing to see other sources of food. Hunting takes a lot of work. I have friends that are hunters, and not every time you go out is a guaranteed going to get a deer. Just not going to happen. You know, there are times that they go and they sit in the cold for hours, come home empty handed. I mean, that's part of the reason that deer have lasted so long, that and their super crazy high numbers. So there's that. Just by the fact that they're refusing, they're narrowing their focus on only one type of animal instead of, you know, squirrel or rabbit, which probably have even more numbers, to be honest, and you see them more often. I mean, I live in a fairly rural area, and I see deer fairly often. I see squirrels way more often. Oddly enough, I see a lot of turkey out here. So, during the shit hit the fan, my plan is to eat turkey like it's Thanksgiving every day. No, not really. I was doing some research for this on the Great Depression, because we've all heard the rumor that during the Great Depression, since so many people were hunting to put meat on the table, the deer population almost became extinct. I was not able to find actual verification for this. It does not seem that the deer population was actually hunted to extinction. Certain areas had little to no deer population, but as a species, the white-tailed deer did not come close to extinction. There were other areas that had plenty of them, and there are areas that where they were wiped out. But overall, no, not extinction. Another factor in that seems to be that coming out of the 18th century, the 1800s, the deer population did get pretty close to extinction, and through a combination of hunting and expansion of humans, loss of natural habitat for the deer, their populations had dwindled. So going into the Great Depression, the deer population was already hindered fairly badly. You know, whereas right now, kind of have a surplus, kind of, you know, with hunting on the decline over the past couple of decades and sharply even more years, the deer population is pretty high. So if we had a collapse right now, I would say Eaton would be good at the beginning and then sort of sharply decline. Even though I still don't think that should be your number one plan. But, you know, a boon to us that through conservation and hunting policies, the deer population is booming right now. And another, to move off of just the sole deer populate thing, feral hogs in many parts of the country are a problem and are a, air quotes, guys, problem. During a collapse, shit hit the fan, a surplus of a tasty meat product is not a problem. That's a blessing. Of course, the other annoying surplus, no, annoying invasive species is the stupid, what is that creature called? An armadillo. Here in Tennessee, we have like swarming armadillo now. They're all over the place. Rarely ever do you see one alive, though. They apparently just love to go get underneath car tires and get squished and killed. And don't make that your survival plan. Don't go eat an armadillo. I've seen one alive, I think. I saw one rooting around the woods one time and I almost shot it because I didn't want it around. And they carry leprosy. And leprosy is making a comeback because I think people are eating armadillo. So don't eat armadillo. That's not a myth. Don't eat armadillo. Except for there's one restaurant I've seen that serves armadillo, but they're not wild armadillo. They're like bred in captivity. Don't eat armadillo. That's my point there. The government will save you. I'm sorry, but surely no one that listens to this show thinks that. Maybe there's a smidgen in the back of your head like, oh, well, the government will save us. No, the government won't save you. highly unlikely. Especially depending on the type of shit hit the fan. The government may or may not actually save you at all. Just saying. My skin crawls when I think about giving up personal responsibility to anything else. The government, a charity agency, the generosity of others. It just makes my skin crawl. Like, if I have a problem, I will take care of it. Wishing and whimming on the hopes of others, I just can't even stand. Somewhat off topic, mostly not off topic though, is, and I thought about making this like a survival punk challenge, and we haven't done one of those in a while. So if you listen to this, let me know. But I listened to an audiobook, a business audiobook, Grant Cardone. It was, massive, my 10X, the 10X rule. Trying to remember, I haven't listened to it in a while, and I should listen to it again, but it had a lack of actionable things. But it was good. It was very motivational, though. And there was a part of the book where part of the 10X mentality is to claim responsibility for all aspects of your life. Yes. Yes. That's more people need that. One of the examples he gave in the book was, something happened to his like county local power station and he lost power and stuff. And, you know, he had neighbors that were like, oh, why did the government do this to me? Blah, blah, blah. They need to fix this. And his mentality was, oh, I wasn't prepared. I should have had a generator and took precautions to make sure that I had myself and my family taken care of. Oh my God, that hit me like a punch in the face. Like, that's basically the reason that we all prep anyway. But he was talking about like a little experiment, a little challenge, a little tool thing to do in your life where you just assume responsibility for all the personal things in your life and solve them, or think of what you could do to have solved them. You know, instead of things happen. Oh, that's it. Instead of things happening to you, you happen to your life. You do the things in your life. You know, by you failing to take action, that's what creates the result. And I probably should listen to that again, but I tend to do this anyway, but every once in a while, like, you'll feel like that the other thought, like, you know, if you make yourself a victim, then you'll be a victim. But if you, you know, like, the other thing slipping in, like, oh, this is happening to me. Like, no, that's, you know, like, one, things kind of happen in life. You know, things tend to wear out and break down. It happens, you know. So there's that. But failing to plan, you know, results in poor results. What is it? You plan to pair up, or you fail to plan? I don't know. There's a slogan, and I'm too tired to think of it. Plan to prep, or you plan to fail? I don't remember. Plan to... Whatever. Yeah. The government will most likely not save you, and you should not even count on it to save you. That should not be your mentality. You take care of yourself, and if the government does come in, you can either A, not be a burden to the people that do need help, or it's just icing on the cake for you. You know, say you're an area that had flooding and the military shows up and they're giving out MREs. If they have enough for every single person, you take your MRE and you go about your business. I mean, if they're not going to give more than one per person, then you just take your icing on your cake and you enjoy life. But don't ever plan on the generosity and the welfare of others. You plan to take care of yourself, and everything else is icing on the cake. Oh, the next one is one that I also hate, and all of us, I'm sure, have heard this at some point, if not even several points. During the apocalypse, I'm just going to go to your house or so-and-so's house. Oh, no, you're not. No, you are not. Ugh. Sometimes I've just let this comment slide, you know, and just like, eh, whatever. I don't feel like talking about it. Like, people are like, oh, James, if a collapse happens, I'm just going to go to your house. And I'll just be like, oh, okay. You know, or I'll be like, oh, yeah, you know, or I'll just walk off or something. But I think sometimes I've actually just been in a bad mood and kind of told them the truth where I'm like, I will shoot you. I mean, maybe that's not what I'll actually do, but I don't really want to give people the impression that, yeah, I'm a prepper and a survivalist and I'm preparing food, but by all means, I will take care of you as well who failed to prepare. And I'm not. I don't want to go around shooting neighbors and friends and family, but I can only store so much and only prepare so much. And it's not my job to prepare for you. It's not. So there's that. I hate that. The better response would be to ask questions and engage the person. And if I have time and the inclination, I try to do this. Well, what are you going to bring to my house? What do you mean, James? I mean, are you going to bring food for you to eat to my house and a place for you to sleep? Because I have a tiny house. So, like, are you gonna build a cabin in the woods behind my house and simply stay here for community and mutual protection? Well, no, I was just going to sleep in your house and eat your food. Oh, so you think that I should buy food for you to eat? Well, no. Then what are you going to eat? I don't know. Yeah, that's... You go down that... So engaging the person and making them think and answer questions is a better way than calling them a dumbass and you'll shoot them. It is. Even though often that's what we just want to say. No, if you come to my house, I will shoot you. But it behooves us as responsible preppers and survivalists to make more of us. I mean, instead of having a bunch of idiots roaming the countryside trying to steal food, if you have a nation of preppers, then a collapse isn't nearly as bad. So yeah, I hate that. I hate that I will go to your house. And I think even coming up with a formal set of rules for a person to be like, well, if you plan to come here, I'm going to need you to go purchase a 10x10 shed, have it placed on my property before the apocalypse happens, stock in it 6 months of food containing, you know, 100 pounds of rice, 100 pounds of beans. And then you should also stock your own medical supplies, ammunition, and a spare firearm here in case you don't make it here or in case you are not able to bring your firearm to me when the shit hits the fan. As opposed to blah, 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 all these other things. Like, that probably is the best response. So they're like, oh, yeah, I'm not going to go to your house. Okay, good. You just sort of make them think about what they actually need during a shit hit the fan as opposed to couch surfing during the apocalypse. Not going to happen. This next one, I will not go long on. I will link to the episode where Mike and I actually talked about it for the entire episode. And that is, during the shit of the fan, I will bug out to Walmart. No, you won't. No, you won't. I will try to condense it. Because it was possibly even an episode that ran long. Whereas now I'm going to try to cover it in about 2 minutes. First, you are not the only person that has that idea. Oh, times are rough. I'm going to go loot Walmart. You know what? Maybe I should look into it and try to figure it out. But in all the cases of disasters, you know, flooding, hurricanes, earthquakes, I generally don't see Walmart looting going on. And that's because Walmart doesn't want to be looted. They rarely ever close. They'll probably hire security guards to show up and prevent looters in the event of a disaster that's able to even still be hired security guards. Their poor managers will probably not be able to leave. They will probably require them to stay there to help guard the building during a disaster. So as a shit hit the fan is occurring, before it's total full on and in depth, you will not be able to get into the Walmart, more than likely. My cat Jorn is doing some silly things right now. Get down from there, Jorn cat. Get down from there. He was trying to climb on top of my gun cabinet. I don't know what he's doing. Anyway. Guerrilla podcasting, folks. Guerrilla podcasting. Yeah, so the Walmart staff will probably be up there, will be there until the very end of the collapse, they will be the first people there. And that's so have you guys seen the pictures on Facebook of a hurricane is coming, a snowstorm is coming in the south? How much food do you really think will be left at the end of that when you think to show up? So first of all, people are going to run in the stores and they're going to buy everything and there won't be really a lot left at all. Ammo, food, consumables, all that will be gone. You may have some vegan food left, some soy burgers, probably. People don't eat that shit. But besides that, the stores will be pretty wiped out and there'll still be a staff there. So by the time that you show up, there'll probably already be a ton of other people there already to try to loot the store. And if that's at the point where when the managers finally did decide, oh yeah, this is never going to happen, I might as well abandon this job because the collapse is nigh upon us, they're going to load up their cars and quit. So they're going to have first dibs of whatever's left, which is probably nothing. Especially with the on-demand inventory system, people think that, I don't know, magically the back rooms are packed to the brim with stuff and it's enough to last forever. It's not. A run on a warehouse would probably be better. I mean, I'm not suggesting you do that either, but I'm saying if you were near one of the few distribution centers for a grocery chain, then that would probably be a wiser bet. But I'm sure that has its problems as well. I've just thought about that. I haven't thought about all the negatives yet, and I'm sure there are many. But yeah, it's not going to work. It's not going to be good for you guys. So just to keep that answer nice and short, you will not bug out to Walmart. You will not be the first. There will not be anything there. It will probably just end badly for you. Don't do it. Make sure that you're well informed and prepared. Know about a collapse well ahead of time, or at least ahead of the idiot curve, and go top off your preps. Oh, I'm going to get a case of water and this and that. And you're good. There's not a problem. I will lose weight during the shit hit the fan. Well, yeah. You probably will. You probably will, but it probably won't be as good as you expected. It probably won't work out as well. One, you still have the expanded stomach and will have a big appetite, and you'll probably be miserable or blow through your preps faster than you expected to. Yes. Two, you will have a higher caloric need. So having that extra body mass going into the shit hit the fan, your body actually requires more calories to maintain that, which you don't want. But your mind is going to send hunger triggers. So you're going to be hungry and miserable. Two, you're carrying that extra bulk. When you need to perform physical activities that you're sedentary and you probably are not used to doing, you're going to be tired and sore and prone to injury. Yes, you could and you probably will lose weight during the shit hit the fan, but it would behoove you to lose it before the shit hit the fan. You know, are you going to be 400 pounds and like sprinting for two blocks? No, you're not. You're not. You know, excuse me. You know, it just, and you're going into a highly stressed time period with a lot of limitations and health problems, you know, probably more likely to have heart conditions or diabetes. None of that's going to help you out during the shit hit the fan. I'm not saying you have to be a buff, you know, a buff dude, but not being morbidly obese is smart. So, do not plan on the apocalypse to be your weight loss plan. Plan on getting in better shape so that the apocalypse will not be as bad for you. Speaking of which, the rumor that I can hike so fast and so far per day. This comes from, I think I was told about it. I think it was another podcast. And I don't know because, excuse me, I generally try not to listen to the competition anymore simply so I don't sound like them. I want the Survival Punk Podcast to sound like the Survival Punk Podcast. Unencumbered by mental baggage of listening to other podcasts. Even though, so, 4 years, I was a huge Survival Podcast fan. And I'm sure Jack's still doing a great show over there. There's not enough podcasts on survival. And, you know, it's, most of you probably listen to all of them. Might as well, right? I mean, it's entertaining. Now, mostly listen to audiobooks. But I didn't want to give you guys basically Survival Podcast light. I wanted to give you the Survival Punk Podcast. So that's why I quit listening to that one and most other podcasts. I may check out one every once in a while just to see what's going on. But really, I don't listen to them. So this was someone told me on another podcast, possibly I think on survival, that someone said their wife's plan was to, she has like a 30-mile commute, and if the car broke down, the shit hit the fan, she had to bug out home on foot. She would get her get home bag of say 30 pounds and walk home that day. You know, 30 miles with a 30-pound pack walking home. That's not even counting the dangers of, well, a female walking home alone for 30 miles. Women disappear all the time. There are a lot of creeper-ass men out there that will kidnap you and eat your face off. Not even counting that. Even if she is concealed carrying and highly trained, which many of us cannot concealed carry at work because work won't let you. And maybe you don't have your weapon in your car either. So that's a double whammy. And then we're going to talk about a 30-mile walk in one day. Yes, I know people in the military that have done that with way more than 30 pounds. And they do it a lot. I mean, the military practices walking, hiking, marching a lot. I mean, they do a lot of walking. It's kind of their job. They're professional walkers. It's what they do. This lady who's commuting 30 miles probably is not a professional walker. I mean, that's a little more than a full marathon that, yes, a lot of people have done and do every year. But, you know, and yes, fat people finish marathons all the time. And it takes a long time. And their recovery. Hold on. Yes, so let's say that you do manage to do a 30-mile hike with a 30-pound bag in a day. The recovery on that for an untrained person is horrendous. You're going to need a ton of calories because you expended a ton of, you used a lot of energy in a short amount of time, even if that short amount of time is like an entire day. your muscles will be sore and tired. Your feet will probably be blistered and destroyed. Your shoes will probably be pretty bad from 30 miles of constant walking. And that's if you make it. I mean, I would much rather say be prepared to, you know, do about half of it and then take a night. Stop, eat, rest, take your shoes off, let your feet air out. That's what I would say. If not, even find a job closer to home, but do what you got to do. So yeah, that one gets me every time that, oh yeah, I work like 30 miles, 40 miles, 50 miles from home, and I'll just, you know, throw them a pack and just walk home. Well, yeah, but it's going to be brutal. I would suggest just maybe even trying to like give it a test run, like go hiking with your pack on and see how well you do, you know, even smaller hikes and less distance, you know, have someone drop you off on the side of the interstate and meet you down the road or park the car and you guys walk. I don't know. See how long that takes you. See how you do. Because it'll not be as easy as you think it will. I have done some pretty long walks before. And it's never a great time. I will learn blah, 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 so and so after the collapse. I've never skinned a deer before, but after the collapse, I'll do that. Yeah, you may be able to do it. You may have a book that explains perfectly how to do it. And, you know, necessity, you will probably eventually figure it out and get it done. But it'll be tough and you may fuck some shit up, you know. First time skinning a deer, you may puncture the internal organs and foul up a bunch of meat. I mean, yeah, sure, there'll probably be a lot of meat left that's still usable, you know, front and back haunches maybe, but you'll waste a lot of meat, and you really don't have meat to be wasting. So yeah, you may be able to figure it out, but knowing how to do it and having done it and having some muscle memory in there and taking the stress out of the equation and the, you know, just sort of click that switch in your head and be like, oh, this is how I do it, blah, 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 blah. Way better than trying to sit there over a deer that you got, that you were lucky enough to hit since you've never hunted before, and your instruction manual, like how to hunt deer from the 1930s and, you know, try to do it. The first time doing anything ever is always a pain in the ass. Recently, my front brakes were starting to squeak, so I was like, I'll go ahead and change them myself. I've never done a brake job before. I looked up a video on YouTube, which may or may not be available when the collapse happens. It looked really easy. It was probably not the video I should have watched, because the guy pulled a brake off of a junkyard car that had no compression in the cylinder, so he just put the new ones on, went about his business without having to compress them, which was not what happened in my case. So, it took a lot of work, and eventually with a C-clamp and an old brake pad, I was able to compress them and make everything work and figure it out. But it was a frustrating, hot, nasty, humid couple, like an hour or so, when it should have been like literally a 15-minute job or so. So, the first time, like now, it would take me no time. After I've done the front two and actually done them like twice, because I fucked it up and did something. But anyway, would have been much easier and less frustrating and a lot happier had I known, had I done it before and actually done it and not just seen a video on YouTube. Excuse me. Maybe a cold is upon me. So yeah. I like having books and I like having information stored for the puck, for the shit hit the fan, a collapse, whatever. But I more like having experience doing those skills beforehand. You know, knowing how to make a trap versus having built a trap, having built one trumps knowing all day long. So yeah, the last one won't really go along on this one either. Car still running old gas. This myth was really, well, I mean, every shit hit the fan, collapse, disaster movie ever perpetrates this myth. Mad Max was horrible about it. Mad Max took place a good distance in the future. After like a good time after the apocalypse, especially some of the later, like Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome and whatnot, and Road Warrior, you know, past the apocalypse, past just his fan. And they're all like, there's no bullets anymore. But gas still runs. Like, they're siphoning gas out of like rusted chunks of cars on the side of the road, and it still works. No, it wouldn't. Here in America, you'd be able to find bullets way after the shit hit the fan. Whereas gas, you know, has a finite lifespan. It starts to go bad fairly quickly without preservations. And even with preservations, depending on which type of preservative you use, you may not get a terribly long time out of it. Sitting in a rusted car in a desert, probably not going to get much of anything out of it. Probably better off trying to light your farts on fire, dudes. Like, just not going to work. So, yeah. The Walking Dead, I hear they're still siphoning gas out of cars and getting them to run. Bullshit. Most zombie novels, they're still getting cars to run if they can just jump the battery off. If that's even, if they're even doing the whole battery thing, if they're just like, I'm just going to get in the car and start it up and go. No, you're not. The gas is bad. The battery's dead. Cars are finicky. Like, if they're not maintained, battery isn't topped off, gas isn't stabilized and fresh gas put in, it's just not going to run. You know, it just starts dying. So yeah, those are a couple of the survival myths I had this week. It was a fun topic. I had a lot of fun covering it. If you like this, let me know in the comments or drop me an email and expand on some of the ideas. What do you feel about them? Do you have any additional survival myths that I should cover? You know, like I said, we've covered this topic a few times before. This was a fun collection of sort of bug out, shit hit the fan myths that I felt should be covered and was fun. So I think I'm working on a Great Depression episode soon. So that'll be fun. Food, lifestyle, sort of some of the myths and stuff. I'm researching it so I can make it a really good episode for you guys. My throat's starting to hurt, so I'm going to wrap this one up. As always, DIY to survive, use guys.